Hello and welcome to another episode of Outside In. I'm John Burns, and today I've got as my guest today John Barton, the Managing Director of Vertebrate Publishing. How are you doing, John?
Good, good. How are you doing, John?
I'm fine, I'm fine. It's pouring down with rain out up here at the moment, so I'm rather glad I don't have to go out. But so I was, well, I thought it would be interesting to find out from you. You know, you're the publishers of a wide range of mountaineering books, both guidebooks, walking guides, and climbing guides, and biographies of mountaineers, and even my own books. And what's been happening with publishing during lockdown? How's that gone for you?
Well, it was amusing. We started off when this whole thing sort of started to become real, and we thought, okay, well, we need to maybe spread the desks out, and we need to get some more soap. People need to wash their hands. And then we started thinking, well, maybe a couple of people could work from home. And then as we were thinking of maybe a couple of people need to work from home, before we sort of finished that breath, it was like, oh, you've all got to work from home. And then we thought, oh God, we're going to lose some bookshop sales. And we found almost overnight, you know, we had maybe well over 100 events booked. They just got cancelled one after another. Started getting boxes of books sent back to the office from, you know, returns. All the school events got cancelled. And then we thought, oh well, thank God for Amazon. You know, at least we've got the evil Amazon who are going to everybody's going to go to Amazon and be able to buy our books, and that'll be fine. And then we called it the day the buy buttons disappeared, because Amazon just stopped stocking books. They stopped ordering books. We didn't get a single order from Amazon throughout April. And it was devastating. We lost 80-90% of our business in 24 hours.
When it went down, it went down very fast, didn't it?
I think on about the Thursday or Friday, I was sitting thinking, do we do nothing? Do we do something, or do we hit the you know, the nuclear button and really sort of think about mothballing the business? And in the time I thought about that, everything, you know, every scenario we had disappeared. You know, our warehouse shut down. We couldn't get books to the office. The printers, you know, the borders closed. We couldn't get books shipped from our European printers. It was hilarious. It was like mountaineering. It was like being on the mountain, and the storm hits. All of a sudden, it was, everything is different.
Well, I remember you saying that you at one point we were concerned that the post office deliveries would go down. But they mercifully have stayed up. And I think you were saying to me that obviously whilst the post office delivery system was still up, you at least could deliver books direct from your own website.
We took our local post office, I think yesterday, we took them a box of chocolates and a bunch of flowers, because they saved us. They've allowed us not to furlough everybody. They've allowed us to. In short, what we were able to do was go out, look for our customers, and post books out from the office. People were fantastic. We've had hundreds and hundreds of orders, direct orders to the office, and the post office saved us. They're even, like, we were turning up like with sacks of post. You know, and there's obviously a huge queue around the block. They were waving us in front of the queue, so we could so we didn't have to stand there, you know, with four sacks of post. They were waving us in. They were processing the post for us, so we didn't have to hang around. In many cases, they were, you know, we were just dropping post, and they were phoning us up a few hours later and saying, "Oh, you know, it's 300 quid. Can you drop it down?" They were just, you know, I can't thank the delivery drivers, the couriers. The postman delivering stuff and then our local post office enough.
In many ways, I think the postal delivery folk and the couriers have been the kind of the unsung heroes of this lockdown, because they've basically kept kept us functioning, really, because I know I've ordered all sorts of things over the internet that I wouldn't normally order, and it's kind of kept me going, certainly.
That was all we had left, and I think that was the if we'd lost the post and the goodwill of our customers. You know, we had customers who were used to ordering a book and it arrived the next day. They were, you know, it was taking up to 2 weeks to arrive, and people were okay with that.
It's certainly the case. Obviously, I know that Amazon at one point were basically pushing everybody towards ebooks, but there's tremendous loyalty, I think, towards the hard paper copy. People want to have a book in their hands, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I could be generalizing, and I don't really know. I think Amazon pushed everybody. You know, Amazon were looking after their shareholders. There's all this business about them just supplying essential goods, but it seemed to include, you know, essential goods seemed to include trouser presses and DIY equipment and all the rest of it. I think Amazon saw an opportunity to promote digital, which they have, you know, a complete and utter monopoly
on.
And I think talking to other publishers, I think people left Amazon and they went to Waterstones and tried to buy books, and they went to, you know, Sam Reed's bookseller in Ambleside, wherever he is, Grasmere, and they came to our website and they bought, we were selling books that were utterly irrelevant to people. You know, our brand new Wild Swimming in the Lake District book, or Swimming Wild in the Lake District book. You can't travel to the Lake District, or you couldn't then. People were just buying it. They were supporting us. They were buying a book that they maybe used next spring. It's good.
Yeah. Well, I think, one of the things that's important about a lot of outdoor books is that you often read them, and they're kind of something that inspires you for something that you might do in the future. You know, it could be, people have said to me that in reading my book, so I really want to get out to Bothies and go to the Scottish Hills now. That might be something they're going to do next year. So that's possibly what has kept your sales going.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we produce a range of books. You know, our tagline is inspiring adventure. We've always tried to produce books that either enable people to go to the outdoors, you know, or inspire them to go to the outdoors. So I think to a certain extent there've been a good anecdote to not being able to go and do your chosen activity, so you could just, you know, spend some time reading about it.
I think that's right. One of the good things that this podcast is allowing me to do, I have virtual meetings with lots of authors now. And that's been fascinating. I mean, I talked last podcast, I think I did, Charles Sherwood came on, and we talked about his book Seven Climbs, which was really quite fascinating because he talks about the seven greatest climbs in the world, really. None of which I aspire to do, I have to admit. But it's interesting to read about that. That's just about to be published, I think. Is that right?
That was actually published at the end of last week.
Right. Okay.
So that was its official publication date. So we did some complicated delivering books to him, and he signed them, packaged them up, sprayed them down with the Dettol, and got them up to us. And all the pre-orders have gone out. That's actually published now. Although it's not available on Amazon because we're still chasing warehouses.
I think it's shortly available on Amazon, as far as I can see.
It is actually, the order's gone into Amazon, so it will be on Amazon probably in about a week's time.
Fairly soon. I mean, that to me, talking to Charles and what I've found out of his book so far, in a way, that's the kind of book that I would have thought should transcend lockdown, really, because he's talking about, as I said, the seven greatest climbs in the world, and, you know, the best one in the world. The number of people who aspire to those sort of climbs must be relatively small, but all of us, I think, can really read those and sort of, I suppose, do a bit of a virtual or an imaginal sort of climb of our imagination, really, which is a kind of escapism that I think we kind of all read right now.
I mean, I think one of the good things about the book, I mean, I find it a very difficult read, that book, because I'm a lifelong climber, and of the seven climbs, I've failed on two of them and not tried the other five. So I feel a bit bittersweet about the whole book. So Charles has got not one over me, he's got two over me with that book. But I think one of the things about the book is we read a lot about Everest, and we get told that, you know, all the time, you know, we're just bombarded with Everest stuff, and hundreds of books come out on Everest. Yeah. And I think Charles has done a very good job in, he's written a very, you know, it's an easy to read book. It kind of tells you a lot about climbing, and it just doesn't fall into that honeypot trap of just hauling Everest into it.
Yes, that's right. It was one of the things I thought was interesting about Charles's book is he talks about the north face of the Eiger, and it made me think, well, actually, that is probably the most famous climb in the world. What do you think?
You'd struggle. I mean, everybody would know what the north face of the Eiger is, but they'd probably struggle to tell you what the two most famous routes up Everest are. You know,
very much so.
I think if you were naming an individual climb, north face of the Eiger is.
I think because obviously that started out in the 30s when they were trying to get up it, and it got it. So, you know, I think the Eiger sanctioned film got it out into the public imagination again, and I think it also, you know, he sent me a photograph of the Traverse of the Gods. And I guess that's probably the most famous pitch in the world. I think the name probably helps.
Yeah, God, I've not thought. I mean, it's one of those climbs that literally every feature has an iconic name. You know, Death Bivouac, the
Swamp Stairs, that's right.
The White Spider.
The White Spider.
You know, they're all very famous. Interstoisa Traverse. You know, they're hugely famous. You know, we can all climb it, you know. Ironically, I can't. I just decided to have a massive accident on it. But
Right. Okay. Well, it's a good place to get killed, from what I can say.
Yeah.
And I always try to avoid places like that, you know. So So what have you got up and coming that you think folk will go for over the next few months?
I think the two books that we're selling most of are Scottish Island Bagging, which is a book that came out just last autumn, While Swimming in the Lake District, which is a book that came out a few weeks ago. And I think people just the lovely books, and I think people want to buy them, and they want to dream about being able to get back to their favourite places. I think in the autumn we've got some really good. Helen Mortz, who's, you know, a very accomplished poet, novelist.
The
Never Leave the Dog Behind book is going to be very popular.
Yes.
We've got a new book from Bernadette MacDonald called Winter 8000, which is charts the winter ascents of all the 14 highest mountains in the world. With the exception of K2, which is still not being climbed in winter. So that, Bernadette's a very accomplished writer. We've also got Elizabeth Revel's book, who some of you listeners might recall was the woman that climbed Nanga Parbat in winter and then got tragically stuck on the descent. And so... Polish mountaineers were flown in, the big crowdfunding campaign to get some money together to mount a rescue bid, and they got her off the mountain. So her memoir of that expedition is published in the autumn. So I think they're some of the books I'm particularly excited about.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, I don't know. I think possibly one of the outcomes of this lockdown, and you know, for God's sake, we're going to get through this at some point. We are going to get out of this. I think might be that possibly that we actually value our outdoors more than we ever did in the past.
I think the thing I've liked about it is people skateboarding down the Avebury's in Sheffield, and just, you know, families out with kids, you know, on what would have been very busy roads, just enjoying the cycling. And I think,
yes.
I think we need to think about, as we come out of lockdown, we need to promote that. That's the important thing.
There's been from obviously I haven't been very far for a while, but you know, even around the streets of Inverness, there has been an explosion of cycling and jogging and walking. I mean, there must be, I would say, more than 10 times what you would normally see. People are just so desperate to get out, you know.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's quite my sort of, there's a nice road that leads from sort of from where I live out into the Peak District, and you can sort of do various circuits within your 45 minutes or your hour, or whatever. And it's, at the moment, it's there's a sort of a lane for horses, a lane for bikes, a lane for runners, and a lane for walkers. And then woe betide anybody that tries to drive up there, you've got no chance. So that's fantastic. And all the posh people arguing with each other over who's got right of way. It's all
great. I see. Yeah, I think I suppose people have had to be innovative and do things they wouldn't do before, or perhaps discovered areas more locally than they would have done. I mean, we've all been stuck in our homes, inside our four walls, either together with others or on our own. And that's been quite a big strain for lots of people, but it was a strain for me, I must admit. And what do you think books and publishing, do you think books and publishing have a role for us in that sort of situation?
I think a book is escapism, and, you know, unlike other forms of media, and, you know, you've got to get away from the news, because the news is, you know, will just sensationalize, and the internet is covered in clickbait. And I think a book is just sheer escapism. And I mean, I'm reading a book called Pax at the moment, like a children's book about a fox and a kid. And it's just beautiful. It just completely takes you away from anything that's happening. Yeah. So I think publishing and writing books, you know, have got a role in the health of the nation. Definitely.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think certainly the best books that I've read, I tend to read at night in bed, and it's a bit like opening a door into a different world and walking away from all the sort of the jabbering internet into something that is completely the world that you share, I suppose, with the author's imagination, and that's quite an intimate thing in a way, and it's also it's a great way, as you say, of shutting out all the rest of the stuff that you're worried about, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you don't turn the page of a book and see suddenly there's like, oh, there's another four books I should be reading, or here's an advert for, you know, get rich quick.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, you don't get that.
So obviously, we were very close to you. You know, you're writing Wild Winter for us at the moment,
and it was
being diaried, and I think we'd forced you out through, driving snow and sleet and gales and storms.
That's right.
And some of the worst storms and flooding that this country had seen for decades, all winter. Then your reward was going to be those final March and April months, weren't they?
In the
Highlands, but you were locked down. So, how's that writing project gone?
The whole idea of Wild Winter really was that I would write a sort of account of my journeyings and wanderings throughout the winter, and one of the things that I'm moving towards really, I'm getting really interested in the wildlife of the Highlands, and I wanted to see for myself some of the iconic wildlife, things like I was hoping for wildcat, but that's difficult. Beaver and pine marten, and even whales. And I kind of started out, I started with the rut. Now, it's a funny thing. I lived in the Highlands for over 30 years, and I must have heard stags rotting and fighting in during the breeding season thousands of times, but I've never actually witnessed two stags actually slugging it out as they do. So I went up with into Strathconnon, a glen not that far away from here, and basically took the trouble to walk up there in the middle of the night and watch as the dawn came in and the stags came down from the hills, and actually saw that kind of combat. And that was great because the book had given me that kind of discipline to see these things, because you can be, I can not exactly take these things for granted, but you know it's going on, but you never actually witness it. And then also I went out from the Isle of Mull on a fascinating little boat that took us right out into the Sound of Mull and beyond there, past the Isle of the Merchant Peninsula, and the idea of that was to see whales. Now, I didn't see whales, because every time the whale popped up, I was looking the other way. But what happened was dolphins came in around the boat, and you know, I've seen dolphins before out at sea, but I've never been that close to them. So it was great to witness those kind of sights, and that was all going very well until we got into the winter. The winter, as you say, the weather just didn't cooperate at all. It was one of the windiest winters I've ever known in my life, so I was struggling to get out. And then I had all sorts of plans for March and April and into May, and all of a sudden Boris pops up on the TV and says, "You're not going anywhere." So that did curtail everything. But actually, to be honest, in the months that I was able to get out, I've got a lot of really interesting stories to tell. And as you know, I tend to tell the odd story. So I think it'll be fine. I'm working now, plowing through the second draft, trying to make it sound as if I actually meant to say some of the things that I've said and make it sound coherent. So, yeah, I'm really confident that we're going to get a fascinating book, and one that's going to be sort of, I know what a trilogy is. I don't know what a quadrilogy or whatever it is. But anyway, it'll be my fourth book. And I think it'll be a development from what I've done. I'm really I really hope my readers will enjoy it.
I got distracted. I was trying to think what a fourth book was, but it probably says something about me being laid back and you being easy to work with.
I don't know. A quadrilogy. There must be a word for it. It's probably quite interesting. Most authors never get past the trilogy.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. Yeah,
I'm sure it is.
The J.K. Rowling of Inverness.
not quite. I haven't quite made that amount of money yet. Anyway, look, it's been fascinating talking to you, and it's really great to work with Vertebrate, to work with the publisher, and I think one of the great things it's done for me as a writer, it's enabled me to get my books out to a much wider public than I would normally have done. And what I would say as a writer also, that you know, we curse the internet, but one of the things that it's done, it's great that my readers can talk to me, because I regularly get emails and messages from readers. And you know, when you're under the weight of 35,000 words or something, and you're struggling on, and you think, oh, what the hell am I doing this for? When you get an email from a reader who said how much they've enjoyed your books, that makes one hell of a big difference, you know. So I'm very grateful for all the work that you put in, everybody at Vertebrate. I think it's been you've got a great little team there, and I really hope that you can keep producing the books that you're producing, and we get some great interest from readers. So, John Barton, okay, well, thank you very much for talking to me, and we'll speak again soon.
Nice one, John. Thank you. Bye.